Hello, everyone. This is a special episode of the Cash Cast, an industry-focused podcast where I interview creators about their life, passions, and hobbies. With me, I have Brina Palencia.
Yay! Sorry. Brina. As I cheer for myself, I'm like, I'm the best.
Oh, trust me. Trust me. That is no problem at all. So, Brina is of multiple talents. You would say you are a voice actor and ADR director, correct?
I would not say ADR director anymore because I only ADR directed for like 2 years and I haven't done it since my 20s.
Okay. Completely fair. Okay. But you prefer to go by just like voice action, correct?
Just actor is fine. I do other types of acting as well. But voice acting is what voice acting is what I am known for.
The reason I have Brina here today is because I wanted to get some questions answered for a potential follow-up video or two concerning some of Funimation's past dubs. And of course, by the way, thank you for being interested in that initial video that I made and agreeing to be on here. It's greatly appreciated. When I do some of these research projects, you know, if I'm able to reach out to people to get better information, of course. So, you know, makes everything better for everyone.
Yeah, of course.
Firstly, concerning questions about One Piece, when did you start working on a One Piece dub and what was the process like to get casted?
I believe it was 2007-ish. I remember it being one of the more intense casting processes because usually when you audition for an anime dub, you do the audition and that's it. You either get it or you don't, and you either like are called to come in and record after that or you're not and you just assume you didn't get it. Whereas with this one, for One Piece, we had to do several rounds. Like, we had callbacks, which, you know, happens in the dubbing industry, but it's kind of rare. Like, it's usually you just kind of get cast or you don't off of one audition. But they had us do several callbacks. And then they narrowed it down to, I believe, 5 people per character. And then Oda chose who he wanted with those options. So all of the current Funimation / Crunchyroll cast of One Piece, the main Straw Hats, we were all chosen by Oda.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever like interfaced with Oda directly or was it
I just... wish that would be incredible. No, I've never had the honor of that. It'd be mind blowing if I ever did, but no.
Oh, of course. So speaking of that little process, did you always want to voice Chopper, or are there any characters you initially wanted to voice before choosing on Chopper?
Well, that was really early on in my career, so I would have been happy to have any of them. I was just stoked to even get to audition for it. I knew it was a big deal when I was auditioning for it just because of how everyone talked about it and how seriously everyone took the auditions and everything. Like, everybody wanted to be on the show. So I was down to get anything. Totally down to get anything.
So in terms of One Piece itself, were you familiar with One Piece itself or the 4 Kids dub prior to joining?
I had heard of it and I watched some of the 4 Kids dub before I auditioned. I knew that that wasn't the direction that they wanted to go, but I just didn't have any other, like, it was, that was the easiest way that I could get at least a little bit of the background of the show and like the feel for the show.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, I had watched a couple episodes before auditioning.
And I would say, well, obviously, you know, just a minor sidebar, but I guess it is like surreal because this is more so 4 Kids in Funimation. That is like the quote unquote version that I grew up with. So yeah, like the whole reason I made that video, you know, to begin with, it's because that like transitionary period from the, you know, between two dubs isn't something that I've seen broadly talked about online. A lot of people just like, you know, that first broadcast in 2007, like, it took them completely by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge shift tonally, for sure. Because, you know, as the name suggests, 4 Kids make the stuff for kids, like really young kids. So there was a lot of things that were changed and edited differently. And even Chopper, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Chopper had several different voices, didn't he? Like when he transformed, didn't he change his voice? Yeah. So he had like different voice actors depending on what form he was in.
And I can see like what they're going for, both approaches. Like, you
definitely
know.
I think the 4Kids dub got a lot of hate. And like I understand where people are coming from for sure, but I know I'm good friends with Lisa Ortiz, and I think she's an incredible actress and director. And I think everybody was just doing what they thought was the best at that moment, because you know, anime was still very new, and I think a lot of American companies couldn't necessarily, you know, get broadcasting for anime unless it was made specifically for young children, because there are a lot of, you know, I call them suits, whoever makes the decisions for broadcast network stuff, like, they don't understand, like, if it's animated, then it's for a little child, so you have to make it for a little child. Like, there was just no concept of, like, oh, there's actually a much older audience that is way into this.
Right. You have both your target demographic, of course, for broadcast and television, but in the core audience, it's going to be a fan of the franchise.
Yeah.
You know? And I can definitely understand grievances with the censorship, but for me, as someone who's been a fan most of my life, as currently someone who is also in entertainment, when discussing the quote-unquote legacy of 4Kids, it's always been personally annoying because of the fact that there's not really that room for context. At that time, you really did have to change content, Americanize names,
you had to
practices like that.
Yeah, you had to water everything down because they just weren't sure. And I think, you know, it was nice that whenever the Funimation version came out and it was truer to the original, it was sort of a proof of concept, I guess. It was kind of like, oh, look, this actually still did okay and people still watched it, even though we kept all the same names and kept all the same animation and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was like, I don't know if they saw it as an experiment or what, but I mean, I think, I don't know. I think 4Kids is doing the best that they could at that time, in that time period, you know, like that's all they knew to do. And then.
Right.
I think it was a huge risk in the eye of the broadcaster, you know, like I think it was, and the network, like I think it was a big risk for them to go to the actual original source material, because that's not something that was always done.
Yeah. And I imagine broadcast standards between networks might be jumping ahead to a potential question later, but broadcast standards for different channels obviously are also going to be a factor, which again is something I don't see people discussing or bringing to context.
Well, like, and the time slot. The time slot makes a huge difference.
For, I know 4Kids obviously was showing their stuff Saturday mornings, but eventually when the dub was exclusively shown on Cartoon Network's Toonami block, that was like Saturday night, sometimes at like 10 p.m.
Sometimes even midnight, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, of course, you can like show people smoking and have all this blood and gore and whatever, and it's not a big deal. So yeah, like you said, but when 4Kids had the Saturday morning slot, that's like, you know, for a freaking, like my son, a four-year-old, like I don't let him watch One Piece right now.
Like, right.
Because it's very violent and it's, you know, really intense. And he's, you know, he gets emotional about stuff and he is not going to, you know, he's not going to be able to process it the way that I feel is healthy. So I would not want my child to be watching that on Saturday morning at the age that he is now. Obviously, when he's a little bit older, definitely going to show him. But yeah, but it's, you know, it's a different time slot, different age ranges, different expectation.
Oh, definitely. So with that, well, we kind of addressed this question already, but were there any specific issues in terms of censorship that were dealt with the Cartoon Network broadcast dub?
I don't remember there being anything major with the One Piece. I remember when we did Dragon Ball, because I think Dragon Ball Kai aired both in a Saturday morning block and in a later block. Like, I think we did both, like a kid, a kid version and an older version. So we would have a lot of alts. So we would like have a line that said, you know, God damn it or something in the original. So we would record that. And then we would also record the censored line for the Saturday morning cartoon version of it.
Right.
With One Piece, I think I remember we would sometimes do alts because we just didn't know for sure. Like, I think they were still sort of figuring it out in the beginning of like, how much do we need to censor this? I don't know.
Right.
Let's go ahead and just do a, like, get a few takes that are censored just in case so we don't have to, you know, come back for a bunch of pickups. So I think we kind of did that in the beginning and then gradually just like stopped. We never get censored alts anymore, obviously. But
yeah, that definitely makes sense. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, all those original broadcasts are archived. And from what I saw, it ended up like shipping between, for One Piece, obviously, between Y7 and PG.
Yeah.
I was around for the whole era of pre-final chapters, obviously, like Dragon Ball Z Kai airing was a doozy because I remember the initial Nicktoons broadcast. Then shortly after, there was like four kids this block had agreed to syndicate it on Saturday mornings.
Right.
And this is like a personal question, so feel free to correct me. For a long time, I had personally assumed that when Kai was only airing on Nicktoons, which was, you know, a premium cable channel, like censorship was like a bit less restrictive, which like personally I felt, given TVY7 standards, like I felt it was perfectly fine. I didn't notice anything as a kid. But once it was also showing on a 4Kids block, censorship around the board became a bit more restrictive. Is that correct or am I off base?
I have no idea. I don't know. I really don't know.
Completely fair,
yeah,
of course.
I have no clue. I'd have to like go back and watch things and try to remember. But yeah, I have no answer. I'm so sorry.
Nah, that's okay. It's just definitely like something I've noticed because you have like a lot of people assuming that Kai, because Nicktoons aired first, and for a lot of people, I guess like in that core fandom group, they think like Kai in general is just completely censored.
Yeah, I don't that all of Kai is censored. I don't think so. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, some of it, like, obviously he was more than me, of course. Yeah. But, like, but, you know, like, some of it was just, like, censored, like, you know, edited frames and whatnot. Because, like, Japanese, like, broadcast standards, like, edit at times, so.
Well, and it was my understanding that a lot of the editing that happened was just to shorten it. Because that was the whole,
whole
point of Kai was to shorten it.
Right, right.
Not to censor it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think so, but I mean, you know, maybe sort of like by coincidence or something, it ended up censoring some of it. I mean, I guess, yeah, you're having to take out a lot of the violence. The violence is what took a long time.
Yes.
So it would make sense that a lot of the fighting stuff was cut out. So yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Shifting back into One Piece for a bit. And this is another personal question that I'm interested in answering, but of course, answer to the best of your ability. A key part of that early phase of the One Piece dub is the fact that opening and ending songs were localized. So what was your own experience singing and writing for these?
I always thought it was really fun. I wrote quite a few of them. I don't remember how many, and I find myself like, like I'll hear one, like a few weeks ago I was at a signing and they had a bunch of the One Piece openings playing in the background. And I was like, did I do that one? I think I did that one. I remember them if I sang them, but if I wrote them, you know, adapted the lyrics, then it was a lot harder for me to remember. Like, I think I wrote that one. I do remember,
yeah.
I do remember by the end of like, after I had done a few of them, they started to get so easy to me because, you know, all of them had the same theme of sailing and friendship, going out to sea, adventure. So
right.
It was, you know, I guess formulaic. So I went from an adaptation taking me several hours, sometimes like a couple days, to, I remember one of them only took me 30 minutes.
Oh,
it was,
wow,
so fast. And I was like, damn, I think I'm getting this down. But then they stopped dubbing them, so it didn't matter anymore.
Yeah. So do you mind if I ask, because going to wikis, they said it was like stuff to record labels. But, you know, in my notes is, of course, after someone who was watching Dragon Ball Super on Toonami, they actually did have people do English covers for credits for that.
Yeah, I was the music director for the Dragon Ball Super ending covers as well.
Perfect
coincidence. I did. I know. Yeah. So as far as that, I think there are a lot of factors. I think some of it is that the band who originally wrote the music wants the opportunity for their music to be heard by an American audience with them doing it, not just a dub of it. I think sometimes it could have to do with budget, because it does cost extra to license the song for the show. And, you know, all of that is above my pay grade. I don't know. I'm never told exactly why a song is dubbed or why it's not dubbed. I'm just told to do it or not do it. So, you know, I always find it fun, but I also completely understand, you know, as a musician myself, I would want my songs heard in other countries. You know what I mean? It's a whole new market to be exposed to my sound. You know, I would want.
Oh, definitely.
I would want that. So I can definitely see where they would be coming from, wanting their music to be heard the way that they originally did it.
Yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah. And at the same time, I also find it incredibly fun getting to dub them. I think it's really fun to sing them. I think it's really fun to adapt the lyrics. I think it's a fun process. But at the end of the day, even as the adapter, my goal is always to honor the original artist. So if the way that they want to be honored is by them being the one heard, then more power to them for sure.
Oh, definitely. Of course, I'm good to either or, but an affinity I have for those, I want to say late 90s, 2000s funny dubs, or just anime dub in general, is when songs are localized. Like, I have a big affinity for basically all the Yu Hakusho songs myself. I think they're really good.
Were those Carl Finch?
I think Carl Finch, Sarah White. Probably some others I'm forgetting, honestly, off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was all before my time. The Yu Yu Hakusho days were just before my time.
Of course. Going back to Dragon Ball for a bit. And, of course, feel free to, you know, just let me know if this didn't really affect you guys on your end. But for better or for worse, a big thing that people know about Dragon Ball Kai, I should say, is the soundtrack controversy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Do you want me to explain, or
no,
do you
no,
want
no, no. I know about it, but I have no idea. I heard what happened, but I have no idea how it happened or why it happened, or I have no explanation whatsoever. It had nothing to do with us on our end. I have no clue how that.
So
how or why someone, that went down?
Yeah. Oh, no problem. So, as someone who was in that demographic, just watching. It was the Nicktoons and later, you know, 4Kids versions of the show. When they were airing, they had, I want to say up to a point, they had the original Kenji Yamamoto soundtrack. However, I want to say the news had dropped in the middle of broadcasting that. So, of course, the Kenji Yamamoto stuff end up in home media. And the reason why people my age have an affinity for Nicktoons broadcast is because it has that soundtrack. But of course, now current Blu-rays, home media, and the version that showed on Adult Swim's Toonami, it had the original Japanese soundtrack from Z. Except for the premiere. I guess someone got the wrong masters. And I saw a couple minutes later, Jason DeMarco tweeted, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. That's another thing that's above my pay grade. I have no clue how something like that happens. I don't know.
Yeah. If it was funny, I wouldn't have complained, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, same. I'm just I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
But yeah, I assume like that happened like once you guys had already like been done recording, so it just matter yeah. like making new Blu-rays, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, so we already touched on broadcast standards. This is another personal question that I had. I'm also a big fan of Tokusatsu on the side. And I actually did not know that you voiced Pekka in the recent Ultraman Z dub. So what was your experience in voicing in Tokusatsu?
It was very short. You know, it was like a 45-minute session, I think, you know.
Oh,
so it was
wow. Just,
I was already there doing another project. It was at Okatron. So I was already working on something else. And they were like, hey, can you do this real quick? And I was like, sure. And that was my experience. That's it. I'm sorry, I don't have a cooler story.
No. Like, it's fine. Like, as a fan of, like, that medium, which is, of course, obviously inherently much more niche in anime, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm really excited for the fact that it is getting some steam, especially Ultraman.
Yeah, I was really surprised because it wasn't really explained to me all that much what even I was doing. It truly was yeah. just like, hey, you're already here for 4 hours for something else. Can you throw this on there too? And, you know, it was at the end of the day. I did it. I left. And then I see everyone talking about it on Twitter, you know, months later. And I was like, oh, that was like a thing that people cared about. I had no idea. And I mean, you know, I always try to bring my all to everything that I'm doing, even if I don't think it'll ever get seen. So,
right.
You know, it wasn't like, oh no, I phoned it in. Like, so I try not to phone stuff in as a general rule.
Of course.
But yeah, so yeah, I mean, it was cute. I was really happy that my character did not have a mouth. Because that's the toughest thing with live action. I've done quite a few live action dubs yeah. before, and it's so, I mean, you know, with anime you can match the mouth movements because they're not that specific, but when it's a live action human being, there's so many muscles in the human face that
right.
you see, especially in those close-ups. So when you're trying to, with a totally different face
yeah.
in a totally different language that's expressed in a totally different way, it's just impossible for it to match. It will never look like it matches. You know what I mean? So I was happy I did not have to deal with that with Pekka.
And honestly, it's funny. We keep bringing up four kids this session, to be honest. But I just remember, like, originally it was who actually had dubbed, well, not entirely, maybe, I don't know, a previous Ultraman show, which is it was Ultraman Tiga in like probably like the early 2000s.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Obviously, it's just like me showing my quote-unquote nerd card. But Tsuburaya has always been much more open in terms of wanting to bring stuff like Ultraman over, as opposed to Toei with, you know, their franchises. Like, they got you, like, you know, adapting it rather than just, like, giving it over wholesale.
Right, mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I've definitely been interested because for that, they had, I want to say, like 20 to 30 episodes of that. And, you know, edited a little bit and, you know, I don't think the broadcast finished. But by the time it was home media, despite like all the packaging, obviously, like, you know, if you picked up a Toys R Us, you would have thought it was like for the dub, but no, for kids and Funimation, who were distributing DVDs, were like, well, just to give you the complete, like, uncut sub release. Despite all the DVD extras being for the dub, and now the dub's like boarding a lost media. So, again, it's very odd, obviously, but you know how it is.
It's a weird industry.
Yeah.
It's, and it's changed so much in the time that I have been in it. It's mind-blowing how much more mainstream it is. It's wild.
Oh, definitely. You know, when I was doing research for that original video, and obviously, like, who knows if it were true, but I think, like, Alcon did mention that he was, like, considering, like, the possibility of, like uncut releases of One Piece. No, back when 4Kids was doing it.
So, like, a...
Yeah.
Wait, how would that work?
Yeah, so, like, they did have precedent, I should say, for this concerning a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! And Shaman King. So those were exclusive DVD, while obviously the cut for kids was still airing on TV. Never lasted long, and I think the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set specifically is, long story short, why 4Kids is no longer here.
Right.
But, you know, definitely interesting because, like, we had already discussed this privately, but one thing I will never do is throw shade at anyone at NYED Post.
Yeah, me neither. Definitely not.
Yeah. Like, I'm biased because I'm a New Yorker, but...
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I don't ever want to throw shade at 4Kids or anyone, especially anyone from NYAB Post. I love all those guys. And everyone was just like doing the best with what they were allowed to do. Like, they weren't the ones making the decisions. Like, the weird faceless suits are the ones that are making all the decisions and deciding that this is the only way that we'll allow this to be seen by an American audience. And it's like, it's not the artists that are making those mistakes. It's the suits that are making the mistakes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I guess to a degree as well, when it comes to, you know, the Americanization of the time, if it wasn't okay, then, like, because obviously I imagine, like, Toei, like, signs off on this stuff, and they signed off on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. They signed off on that, and then I guess they just decided, they decided that it wasn't working, and that's why they changed course, or I'm not sure how that decision was made. I don't work at Toei, so I don't know. I don't know what discussions happened on their end, but, it was a really hard left turn. I do remember that being, like, a shocker. Like, that everybody was like, whoa, they're redoing it and everything is going to be different and they're not editing it and they want it to be completely removed from the 4Kids version entirely. And it was just like, okay. I'm just a very young actor trying to make a living.
And here it has been, what, like, almost like, well, I think like 16 years later.
Doing One Piece?
From that dub. Like, the reason the original video was a bit phoned in, I was in Atlanta just like scripting it, but then I realized if I'm able to speed run through this, I could upload this like on the actual day of broadcast. So I figured, hey, I might as well just go for it.
Nice.
Yeah, of course. Like, I had like my little CRT set up in order to, like, you know, actually put some of the footage, and, you know, it was like traveling back in time. Let's see, I have two viewer questions, just simple ones, obviously. One, of all the characters you provide a voice for, which is your favorite?
I mean everyone will always say, like, oh, it's like picking your favorite child. It's impossible to pick a favorite character. That's bullshit, for one. Total bullshit. I have a lot of favorite characters. Chopper is definitely way up there just because I've lived with him for so long. Like, he's just so sweet, and I'm so proud of him with how much he has grown, and I feel just so lucky to get to have witnessed that and been a part of that with the dub. Like, he's just such a good boy. And I love him so much. Chopper's definitely up there. I love CL Phantom Hive from Black Butler. He's one of the most difficult characters I've ever had to voice, both technically and emotionally.
Oh, wow.
Just so he goes through so much, and then having to do it all with a British accent, and as a boy, is, you know, all of those things very challenging. But that's my favorite thing as an actor, is to be challenged like that.
Right.
And then I love Yuno Gasai in Future Diary. I distinctly remember feeling like I leveled up as an actor just getting through that role, because it was so challenging, and so she's so nuanced and just messed up, but like not. I love Future Diary and the way that it's written, because she's just the ultimate yandere, but like they give her a reason why. She's not right. just crazy obsessed with this bully for no reason. They give her such a good backstory. And as an actor, it was just so much to sink my teeth into. And I also love Holo from Spice and Wolf. I'm getting to revisit the character in the audiobooks.
Nice.
Yeah. Michael Tatum and I are voicing the audiobooks, and it's been so cool to just kind of live in that world again in the book version, because I feel like I'm getting to know her a lot more. And it's also cool revisiting the character being older, because whenever I voiced Holo in the anime, I was used to sort of always being the youngest person in the room, and Holo obviously is not. She's, you know, a wolf goddess who is, you know, super old and just looks young. And so now I'm sort of becoming, you know, I've been in the industry for 20 years now. So like I'm now older and wiser, and I'm noticing just the way that younger humans interact, and seeing people in their 20s and seeing things that I thought when I was in my 20s that I was like playing it cool and that like no one would ever notice. But now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. It's so transparent when you're older and wiser. And I'm like, this must be how Holo feels about everyone. So I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I understand her a lot more, and in a much deeper way than I possibly could have whenever I was in my 20s.
Right, of course.
Yeah. But yeah. I love Toka from Tokyo Ghoul, and my favorite thing about her, and this is a spoiler if you haven't watched everything, but whenever she tells Kaneki that she's pregnant, I was also pregnant.
Oh my God.
Yes. Like in real life. And so,
wow.
Like I will never, that's one of my most memorable days of recording for like any anime for me, because I don't know, it was just so cool. It was just such a neat, like, oh my God, life imitating art.
Right? Talk about committing to the role.
Right. Yeah, totally. It was cool. Yeah. And there are other characters. Yeah. Like a honorable mention, Sakura in a Zombieland Saga, because I got to sing and rap. So that was pretty dope. And I did this the song adaptations for that show as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we didn't get to do anything for the second season. Again, they don't ever tell me why. I have no idea why. But we did get to do the first, and it was really fun.
Completely fair. Yeah. Let's see. Another question. Are there any characters you would like to voice in series that never received either an English dub or an official anime/TV adaptation?
I mean, yeah. I guess, no. I mean, yes and no. There are things, you know, as an actor, we're very used to not getting what we want most of the time, since most of what we audition for, 90% of it at least, you don't get. And then on top of that, if you're an actor, you're not the one making productions, so you don't get to decide what actually gets made or into an anime or TV series.
Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, I think if I held on to those and actually remembered all of those, I would be a lot more depressed. Because again, like, actors have little to no control over anything. So it's, it's just a lot of disappointment. I always tell people, if they want to be an actor, I'm like, well, you have to be willing to be disappointed almost all of the time. It's right. Delightful when you're not, and it's incredible. It's like winning the lottery every time you actually book a role. But for all of those, for all of that rejoicing that you see on social media and everything, they're not talking about the hundreds and thousands of auditions that they did before they got to that announcement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they always say social media is people's highlight reel.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's not actual real life.
Yeah. But, of course, I would just like to say, obviously, thank you for your years of service, for lack of a better expression.
It's like I'm in the military.
But, no, of course, because of, you know, like, One Piece mania hitting, I've definitely been like going back to try and, like, you know, catch up. Who knows how long that'll take me, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's insane. It's insane, especially One Piece is such a great example of the industry changing, because we went from when we first premiered the Funimation dub, it was a hit. Like, everybody was stoked. It did so well. And then the popularity waned quite a bit. I mean, to the point where we almost weren't dubbing it anymore. Like, I know there was, like, there were definitely long pauses in between seasons sometimes, and there was always like murmuring in the offices of like, are we actually still gonna dub this anymore? Like, is it not doing well? Like, what's going on? And now it's just like skyrocketed. Like, taking my son trick-or-treating last night and seeing the amount of like One Piece stuff was like crazy. Like, aww. It was cool. But yeah, it's still just so bizarre how mainstream it has become. Like, I mean, it went from like total obscurity to just, wow, it's one of, you know, wasn't it like one of the top shows on Netflix for quite some time?
Like, yes.
It's crazy.
Not even live action. Like, once they got rights to the actual show, the first couple of seasons, I consistently saw it on top of a couple lists.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, it's kind of surreal. It's weird.
Yeah,
I'm super grateful for it. I especially, you know, like I said, it's a character that I've lived with for 16 years, and I love him, and I love all my crewmates. I love all the Straw Hats. I care, and I love all the voice actors for our crew. Like I genuinely love every single one of them, and am proud of every single one of them in their life. I'm proud of their characters and what their characters have gone through, and how much we've all grown, both as people and as characters. It's
oh, of course,
it's really cool. It's like, what a wild thing that we get to have that continually connects us, even if we don't see each other for years. I know that I'll get to hear them whenever I'm acting, which is really special.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I made this final point in my video, but, you know, a lot of people lament, I guess, like, that initial 4Kids licensing. Like, they say, like, probably kneecapped One Piece potential reach in the States. But when we look at it now, you know, like, it's turned completely around. I definitely do not think that we have to worry about that impact at this point.
Yeah, like, regardless, if that was even true back then, it's certainly not true now, you know?
I think Luffy's getting a float in the Thanksgiving parade.
Yes. Yeah. He's getting a Macy's float is a big deal.
Incredibly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think it matters. However it started, it ended up in a really wonderful place and exactly where it deserves to be.
Yeah, definitely. It was a long haul, like One Piece itself, so yeah. It fits in a way.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty cool.
Okay. I'm basically out of questions on my end. So thank you for being a lovely guest and the first voice actor on my podcast. Hey. So thank you for that as well.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, Brianna, where can people find you? You can say either socials or productions that you're currently in, either or.
Yeah, definitely the easiest place to reach me is, or just not even reach me. No one can reach me. If you want to see anything that I'm doing, you can follow me on Instagram at Brinakins, B-R-I-N-A-K-I-N-S. I also am doing a podcast right now called But I'm Spiritual. It's a spiritual comedy podcast where we interview people in a totally accepting environment about their spiritual practices and their spiritual beliefs. But we try not to take ourselves too seriously. We have reverence for the actual practices, but not reverence for ourselves. We laugh at ourselves and our stupidity as little human meat sacks. But yeah, that's me and my friend Artis Campbell. It's pretty cool. If you're into any sort of spirituality or are curious about any sort of spirituality, I recommend it.
Okay, for sure. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, honestly.
Thank you.
And of course, I will probably be using this. I'm cutting this part out, obviously. But I will probably be using material in this in like two upcoming video projects. And I'll keep you posted for a pop. Yeah. Well, now I'm glad I'm cutting this out. I will keep you posted for the final projects.
Great. Perfect.
Okay. And for anyone listening to the audience, if you want to keep up with progress of my future projects, YouTube and otherwise, you can feel free to keep up at kofi.com/A2Adam. And I'll also have a link tree in the description. If you donate, you can get early access to episodes, you know, and basically anything that I'm making. So, of course, thank you for listening to this special episode. I'm Adam.
And I'm Brina.
And we will both see you next time. Remember to stay safe, take care, wear a mask, and remember, love and peace always. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.